Today's story for all ages is told by Reverend Duffy and is entitled Enemy Pie. Would the children please come forward? You're going to love this one.
As Dick said, our story today is Enemy Pie. Now I wonder what Enemy Pie could possibly be. Let's listen, and maybe we'll discover what it is. It should have been a perfect summer. My dad helped me build a treehouse in our backyard. My sister was at camp for 3 whole weeks. And I was on the best baseball team in town. It should have been a perfect summer. But it wasn't. It was all good until Jeremy Ross moved into the neighborhood right next door to my best friend, Stanley. I did not like Jeremy Ross. He laughed at me when he struck me out in a baseball game. He had a party on his trampoline and I wasn't even invited, but my best friend Stanley was. Jeremy Ross was the one and only person on my enemy list. I never even had an enemy list until he moved into the neighborhood. But as soon as he came along, I needed one. I hung out in my treehouse where Jeremy Ross was not allowed to go. Dad understood stuff like enemies. He told me that when he was my age, he had enemies too. But he knew of a way to get rid of them. I asked him to tell me how. Tell you how? I'll show you how, he said. He pulled a really old recipe book off the kitchen shelf. Inside, there was a worn-out scrap of paper with faded writing. Dad held it up and squinted at it. Enemy pie, he said, satisfied. You may wonder what exactly it is in enemy pie. I was wondering too, but Dad said the recipe was so secret, he couldn't even tell me. I decided it must be magic. I begged him to tell me something, anything. I will tell you this, he said. Enemy pie is the fastest known way to get rid of enemies. Now, of course, this got my mind working. What kinds of things, disgusting things, would I put into an enemy pie? I brought Dad some weeds from the garden, but he shook his head. I brought him earthworms and rocks, but he didn't think he'd need those. I gave him the gum I'd been chewing all morning. He gave it right back to me. I went out to play alone. I shot baskets until the ball got stuck on the roof. I threw a boomerang that never came back to me. And all the while, I listened to the sounds of my dad chopping and stirring and blending the ingredients of enemy pie. This could be a great summer after all. Enemy pie was going to be awful. I tried to imagine how horrible it must smell, or worse yet, what it would look like. But when I was in the backyard looking for ladybugs, I smelled something really, really, really good. As far as I could tell, it was coming from our kitchen. I was a bit confused. I went in to ask Dad what was wrong. Enemy pie shouldn't smell this good. But Dad was smart. If enemy pie smelled bad, your enemy would never eat it, he said. I could tell he'd made enemy pie before. The buzzer rang and Dad put on the oven mitts and pulled the pie out of the oven. It looked like plain old pie. It looked good enough to eat. I was catching on. But still, I wasn't really sure how this enemy pie worked. What exactly did it do to enemies? Maybe it made their hair fall out, or their breath stinky. Maybe it made bullies cry. I asked Dad, but he was no help. He wouldn't tell me a thing. But while the pie cooled, he filled me in on my job. He talked quietly. There is one part of enemy pie that I can't do. In order for it to work, you need to spend a day with your enemy. Even worse, you have to be nice to him. It's not easy, but that's the only way enemy pie can work. Are you sure you want to go through with this? Of course I was. It sounded horrible. It was scary, but it was worth a try. All I had to do was spend one day with Jeremy Ross. Then he'd be out of my hair for the rest of my life. I rode my bike to his house and knocked on the front door. When Jeremy opened the door, he seemed surprised. He stood on the other side of the screen door and looked at me, waiting for me to say something. I was nervous. Can you play? I asked. He looked confused. I'll go ask my mom, he said. He came back with his shoes in his hand. His mom walked around the corner to say hello. You boys stay out of trouble, she said, smiling. We rode bikes for a while and played on the trampoline. Then we made some water balloons and threw them at the neighbor girls, but we missed. Jeremy's mom made us lunch. After lunch, we went over to my house. It was strange, but I was kind of having fun with my enemy. He almost seemed nice. But of course, I couldn't tell Dad that, since he had worked so hard to make enemy pie. Jeremy Ross liked my basketball hoop. He said he wished he had a basketball hoop, but they didn't have room for one. I let him win a game just to be nice. Jeremy Ross knew how to throw a boomerang. He threw it and it came right back to him. I threw it and it went over my house and into my backyard. When we climbed over the fence to find it, the first thing Jeremy saw was my treehouse. My treehouse was my treehouse. I was the boss. If my sister wanted in, I didn't have to let her in. If my dad wanted in, I didn't have to let him in. And if Jeremy wanted in, can we go in it? He asked. I knew he was going to ask me that. But he was the top person, the only person on my enemy list. And enemies aren't allowed in my treehouse. But he did teach me how to throw a boomerang, and he did have me over for lunch, and he did let me play on his trampoline, and he wasn't being a very good enemy. Okay, I said, but hold on. I climbed up ahead of him and tore the enemy list off the wall. I had a checkerboard and some cards in the treehouse, and we played games until Dad called us down for dinner. We pretended we didn't hear him, and when he came out to get us, we tried to hide from him, but somehow he found us. Dad made us macaroni and cheese for dinner, my favorite. It was Jeremy's favorite too. Maybe Jeremy Ross wasn't so bad after all. I was beginning to think that maybe we should just forget about enemy pie. But sure enough, after dinner, Dad brought out the pie. I watched as he cut the pie into 8 thick slices. Dad, I said, it sure is nice having a new friend in the neighborhood. I was trying to get his attention and trying to tell him that Jeremy Ross was no longer my enemy. But Dad only smiled and nodded. I think he thought I was just pretending. Dad dished up 3 plates side by side with big pieces of pie and giant scoops of ice cream. He passed one to me and one to Jeremy. Wow, Jeremy said, looking at the pie. My dad never makes pies like this. It was at this point that I panicked. I didn't want Jeremy to eat enemy pie. He was my friend. I couldn't let him eat it. Jeremy, don't eat it. It's a bad pie. I think it's poisonous or something. Jeremy's fork stopped before reaching his mouth. He crumpled his eyebrows and looked at me funny. I felt relieved. I had saved his life. I was a hero. If it's so bad, Jeremy asked, then why has your dad already eaten half of it? I turned to look at my dad. Sure enough, he was eating enemy pie. Good stuff, he mumbled through a mouthful. And that was all he said. I sat there watching them eat enemy pie for a few seconds. Dad was laughing, Jeremy was happily eating, and neither of them was losing any hair. It seemed safe enough. So I took a tiny taste. Enemy pie was delicious. After dessert, Jeremy rode his bike home, but not before inviting me over to play on his trampoline in the morning. He said he'd teach me how to flip. As for enemy pie, I still don't know how to make it. I still wonder if enemies really do hate it, or if their hair falls out, or if their breath turns bad. But I don't know if I'll ever get an answer, because I just lost my best enemy. And that is the end of our story. Anyone who has been attending to the news knows that there is a significant amount of very disturbing stuff happening in the world of late. In numerous countries around the globe, people are fleeing their homes because they are threatened by armed gangs, violent extremists, opposing armies, or even their own governments. In the past year, there have been terrorist attacks in France, Nigeria, Pakistan, and here in this country. All have received international attention with all the violence and threats of violence that are occurring. The reaction that many people are having is both predictable and understandable. When a threat is either experienced or perceived, a typical response is to feel fear. Today, many people in our country are feeling fear. We can see it in a number of ways. One example is the recent significant increase in gun sales in many states across our country. Another is recent statements by politicians and aspiring politicians about keeping certain people out of our country. It seems to me that such statements do more than just name or identify fear. They often encourage and instigate it. Some of the statements being made are encouraging and instigating fear by taking the facts, the grain of truth from recent events, and implying that certain specific events in specific places pose a threat to everyone, everywhere. I am troubled by this. I'm troubled by this because encouraging and instigating fear is often more harmful than beneficial. We all know that shouting fire in a crowded movie theater where no fire exists can get people hurt or even killed. It is important then that all of us, and especially those who are in the public spotlight, refrain from fanning the embers of fear to create an inferno that may engulf people who are innocent of any wrongdoing. We may not realize it, but fear, especially inappropriate or unjustified fear, may pose more of a threat to us than that which we are fearful. Fear, you see, has the ability to generate and hold an incredible amount of emotional charge. And fear, especially intense fear, can cause people to react in ways that are irrational and at times even destructive. Fear triggers what is often referred to as the fight or flight response. The flight response is what creates the problem when someone shouts fire in a crowded movie theater. The fight response is intended to protect us from imminent harm through preparing us to engage the threat in battle. That is what it is supposed to do. But when we're fearful, our ability to accurately identify what is a threat and what isn't may be significantly compromised. That is because when we feel fearful, the part of our brain where we think things through and make conscious decisions takes a back seat to the portion that reacts almost instantaneously. And fight or flight aren't the only two things that fear can trigger. Fear can also cause us to freeze. You may have heard the phrase, frozen by fear. Fear can can stop us from responding when it is both appropriate and necessary to act. I'm not implying here that fear is bad or doesn't have its place. Fear is an important emotion, one that has helped our species reach the point we're at today. Fear has its place and its time. My concern is about fear that is fueled and or fostered at an inappropriate place or time. I'm concerned that fear is being used to further an ideology instead of to help people survive and thrive. In this time of heightened fear and fiery rhetoric, we need an option that allows us time to rest. An option that lets us step out of the fear so we can fully use all parts of our brain and feel our full range of emotions. We need an alternative that can give us hope, hope for the future. There are very likely a number of options that would fill the bill. From both my training and experience as a clinical social worker, I know that cognitive behavioral approaches can be helpful to combating irrational fear. My training and experience have also shown me that having an emotional alternative to turn to can make a positive difference as well. Today, I want to focus on one such emotional alternative that is lifted up in reverence in many religious traditions from around the world. That alternative is love. Love, like fear, can hold a very strong emotional charge. And certain kinds of love can cause us to act irrationally, just as fear can. I'm over 60, but I still recall some of the less than well thought out choices I made in my youth as a result of falling in love. Those may be fodder for a future sermon, but I highly doubt it. Anyway, that romantic type of love, called eros in Greek, didn't always allow me to use both my head and my heart when making decisions. The kind of love I'm referring to when I say love trumps fear isn't romantic love. The type of love I'm talking about here is that which is identified by the ancient Greek word agape. Agape is considered to be the highest type of love. Love that is unselfish, altruistic, and charitable. From my studies of various religious traditions, this is the type of love that a good number of great spiritual teachers have advocated. Among these teachers are the Buddha and Jesus. In the Buddhist tradition, loving kindness is considered to be one of the divine abidings or sublime states. A Buddhist practitioner is encouraged to meditate on and practice loving kindness in every aspect of life. Jesus, in the book of John, gave a new commandment to his disciples. He instructed them to love one another as he had loved them. In the book of Matthew, he told his disciples to love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. It seems highly likely that this particular verse is the basis for the bumper sticker I've seen on numerous occasions that says, "When Jesus said, love your enemies, I'm pretty sure he meant, don't kill them." It seems to me that the world would be considerably better off today if there was more of the kind of love that the Buddha and Jesus lived and advocated for. In my estimation, there is currently an overabundance of fear in the world. Fear that can quickly and easily lead to viewing others as the enemy and a threat. When we go into the fight response in reaction to our fear, people can end up getting hurt or even being killed. Today, our world could benefit from considerably less fear, especially unnecessary and inappropriate fear. And what a positive difference it would make if there was more love, the kind of love that Jesus and the Buddha spoke of. Now, I realize that developing and manifesting the kind of love I'm talking about can be very difficult. Some might even say it is impossible to attain and consistently demonstrate this type of love. We are, after all, merely human. Yes, we are merely human, and yes, this type of love may be impossible for us to live into every moment of every day. I would go so far as to say that we might not even be able to live it out most moments of any given day. But the fact that we are currently limited in our ability to feel and show such love doesn't mean we should give up trying to do so. Let me tell you the reasons I say this. People who study human behavior and emotions tell us that a basic function of fear is to assist us in addressing threats, real or perceived. Fear helps us survive. In order for fear to be beneficial to us, though, it needs to allow us to accurately identify what is a threat and what isn't. The problem is, as I mentioned previously, we don't tend to do this well when we feel threatened. Our story for all ages today provided a good example of what I'm talking about here. Jeremy Ross quickly became enemy number one because of a few behaviors that were hurtful to the story's main character. Hurt and fear of future hurt then created a wall that separated the two young boys. Luckily, there was a wise and loving adult who was able to intervene. The intervention, I must admit, was somewhat devious. It was devious, but it seems to me it was also very loving and caring. Clearly, the father loved his son who was hurt and fearful. While it may not seem obvious, the father was also caring towards Jeremy Ross. He cared enough about Jeremy Ross to do something that risked the trust between father and son. He had enough faith in love to take an action that was both for both his son's and Jeremy Ross's higher good. It seems to me that this is an example of the kind of love that could benefit not only each of us individually, but also all of us collectively. So here, in a nutshell, is why I believe love trumps fear. Fear may protect us for the short term, But love is what sustains us for the long term. Fear tends to separate us. By us here, I mean the larger us. Love, on the other hand, connects us. Fear narrows our perceptions, while love expands not only our perceptions, but our possibilities as well. And finally, the walls, both physical and emotional, that are created out of fear, eventually become a cage that we lock ourselves in. And sometimes we forget where we put the key. The bonds that are built with love support us and nurture us through the inevitable times of weakness, vulnerability, and uncertainty. The question then becomes, which emotion, fear or love, do we allow to play a bigger role in our lives? Which would most benefit not just you and me, but our country and our world? As for me, I will put my faith and trust in love. My hope is that someday those who are currently promoting fear and separation will learn the recipe for making enemy pie. The world would be considerably better off with more of us sharing pies and fewer of us caged behind the walls of our own making. It is my hope that many more people will find it within themselves to spread the love and share the pie. May it be so.